Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back. We're back with Dr. Bart Kosko, his book Cool Earth, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Bart, let's get back to the Arthur C. Clarke story. So you two started conversing, and what was that like?
What happened, George? Well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, Arthur was a great mind. I think one of the pioneers, grandmasters of certainly science fiction, but I think fiction more generally, and hard science fiction, George, not fantasy stuff. And, of course, the great example is the story Sentinel, which became 2001 A Space Odyssey.
That's right.
A lot of other stuff. And part of that was this great sequence of novels, which everyone should read, called the Rama novels. And you find out at the end of all these novels that the purpose of the universe is to that we're in a simulation and a godlike figure is running simulations looking for harmonious universe seeds. And then comes the big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur, like me, obsessed with not making technical mistakes, said this godlike figure says, I'm looking for a closed, dense set of universe seeds. Well, that's mathematically trivial. And he meant open, dense set. I couldn't resist pointing that out to Arthur, and there it was. I mean, it's an extremely fine point of splitting mathematical hairs. He was not trained in topology, and so it's not his fault. So when I told him that I also published fiction, I had a short story coming out in a magazine where Ray Bradbury had gone first. It was a men's magazine, and then after Ray Bradbury was Harlan Ellison, then me, and he said, I got to see it. And so, wow, you know, he wanted to see the galley proofs, and I faxed him the galley proofs. Remember, he lived in Sri Lanka.
That's right.
In Colombo, right. Sri Lanka. And Arthur came right back. He liked the story, liked the writing, and he caught a big hole. And he really dressed this professor down. I remember he said, take a seat in the back of the class. He just gave a total payback and totally justified. And what do you do, George, when you got Arthur C. Clarke catching a big hole in a science fiction story? It's Cool Earth coming out, already typeset. In those days, it was magazines, so it was very complicated to change it. Well, you take it to the editor, who happened to be a big fan of Sir Arthur, and you say, look, I got to be able to fix it. And I was able to come up, got real creative, and fixed the problem, it was in the background, I was all caught up in the characters and the story, but it was a real problem, and that made a huge difference. And you fix the story, but I then had a chance over the following years, really decades, you think about it, you hike about it, the characters collide in your mind's eye, and it grew into this current effort, the complete drama of Cool Earth, which, by the way, is what we call a real-time drama. You don't see a lot of those. So if there were a film, and I must say that there is a lot of Hollywood interest in this, if there's a film, the 120 minutes or so of the film are the 120 minutes of the story. And so there's very few cases. In the Kubrick case, that was with Dr. Strangelove, or High Noon was a case, Hitchcock's Rope, more recently the movie Gravity. So it's a real-time thriller that's taken many years to evolve, and it's not for the squeamish. It is the end of the world as we know it.
Well, and you gave us 60 years out of it. You gave us to 2080 to get this thing, to get our act together.
You got till 2080. There's a lot of simple steps we can take now, and it's unclear whether we're going to do it. It looks like the warming, which had slowed, is definitely speeding up. Again, just in the last year, the last 10 years was the hottest decade on record. 2019 was the second hottest year on record. 2016 was the hottest year on record. The measurements, George, are getting more accurate. So whatever the politics, and it's ugly, of global warming, let's call it what it is, it's warming, not just climate change. You can change up or down. We're changing up on average. The laws of large numbers, as we call them in statistics, are converging more and more in the simulations as more data come around. We just know a lot more about this than we did even 10 years ago. And the trend is up, appears to be accelerating, and there are certain tipping points, including the melting of the Arctic ice. Now, the Arctic is warming about three times faster than the rest of the atmosphere, and that opens up a lot of possibilities for cooling strategies, which not everybody's on board with, but that's one possibility here. The other thing is, as you warm up in the Arctic and the Antarctic, you begin to thaw the permafrost. That's a very big deal because you have about twice as much carbon that's in the atmosphere now frozen in the permafrost, but worse, you begin to release methane. I think there was a show last year came out called Fire on Ice or The Ice on Fire, and you're finding this in Siberia. They have sinkholes and other places. When you release methane into the atmosphere, that is a much more potent greenhouse gas than is carbon dioxide, and you're going to get accelerations. When you melt the Arctic ice, there's nothing but dark water beneath it. That warms it up versus the Antarctic, which has land beneath it, and so forth. So what can you do? Well, one thing you can do is have a carbon tax. I think most economists agree with that. We are creating what the economists call a negative externality, the sort of thing you do when you pollute. But this pollution stays up in the atmosphere potentially for 100 or so years. A lot of it enters the ocean. We're acidifying the ocean. They're warming. It's real tough to cool that. And we're free-riding, countries free-riding on one another. China's by far the biggest polluter. We're second. We've been reducing emissions, actually, but we still don't have a rational pricing of carbon. And then we're all free riding on future generations. So it's a really vexatious problem, George. It's like the COVID is a kind of run-up to it to see how we deal with this and maybe other pandemics. Can we coordinate? We're not coordinating real well.
Not this
so
one.
Far. But it'd be a lot tougher in the case of warming. The other thing we can do is keep all the options on the table, and that includes nuclear energy. Now, there's been a lot of problems with that, the older uranium reactors, and a lot of scare movies like the China Syndrome. But nuclear is a long-term, renewable, reasonably safe. I know it's got problems in the waste products, but we've been addressing that, and that's the uranium nuclear reactors. That's not the new thorium reactors that are underway in development in China and India, for example. It's interesting, if you remember the Democrat candidate, Andrew Yang, and he proposed, which is, I think, at odds with much of his party, investing $50 billion in research on thorium reactors to jumpstart that. The thorium fuel cycle, thorium is 90 on the periodic table, uranium is 92, is much safer. There's a lot more thorium. You don't have the kind of meltdown risk. The bomb potential is a lot less because it ends up not with plutonium-239 like our current reactors do, but rather with uranium-233 and right down the line. But there's a lot of engineering to be done. And just improving, using the newer models of uranium reactors are out there. And finally, George, cooling experiments. what's known as geoengineering. Now, not something as radical as moving the Earth-Moon system like in Cool Earth. That's the absolute worst case. Hopefully we'll never get there. But there's a lot of things you could do. Local experiments here in California or the Mojave Desert with putting sulfates in the air, what's sometimes called a designer volcano, and maybe going to the poles, especially the Arctic, to do a little bit of that is a form of pollution. It can have some acid rain effects. It won't affect the acidification of the ocean, but it will buy time, and it's, I think, a prudent thing to at least be developing it. Right now there's largely a moratorium on geoengineering, but if the acceleration increases, I think that has to be a rational item on the table. And my bigger point, George, from an engineering point of view, every engineering option has to be on the table. You can't have ideology limiting these things. The ideology can help put it, the issue front and center, but this is going to be a vexing problem, a long-term generational problem. And again, and the incentive is just to punt it, just to kick it downstream, but we may not have that luxury. So relatively inexpensively, a few billion dollars a year, it looks like, if all goes well, you could spray almost like in a garden hose. This is even in the book Freakonomics years ago, by the way. You could spray some sulfur aerosols, especially, say, over the Arctic, and different simulations have come up with different results. But if you could veil or shade that about 25% from the sun,
that's a dramatic change.
You can store a lot of the temperatures.
You sure can. What is Google in your eye that you talk about in the book?
We're going to keep shrinking down these search engines, George. And right now you're using your fingers, and then you can have the touchpad. And increasingly that's going to be where you, quote, will it, a sense of will. But where are you going to store that? I think it inevitably goes in your retina. And there's a blind spot in your retina. There's a way to do it, and it's fairly easy to energize.
Really? Without disrupting our vision?
That'll be, I mean, it'll take some work. But I think you can have it in there, and using some distributed, parallel distributed, in effect, screen, heads-up type of screens. The other thing is, as we increase the interface with the brain and the chip, everyone's working on this around the world, maybe that internal picture can be done differently. But I think you can have it there. The other thing is the energy source can be in different places. You can get solar energy from it, and you could also have backup. For example, on your arm, you might have a backup hard drive. But a lot of what you have on your computer, I think that's going in you at some point. And quite likely in our lifetime here. And once that starts happening, I don't think there's any turning back to it.
When you were putting this together, I mean, this was based on years and years of your experience with all your other works. Was it difficult or was it easy to come up with the scenario of the book?
You know, the scenario I thought of years ago, and it really worked out the story while skiing one night looking at the moon, because the moon gets cracked at the end of the book. But these other technology aspects have, as you suggest, really come out of my published results, and everyone's welcome to view them. I just posted another paper on my webpage. It just will appear in the Journal of Neural Networks in September, which I think, in terms of the mathematical theorems in the appendix, are the current state of the art, at least for a week or two in that field. But I had a chance to think about a lot of things in those regards, George, and including efforts on patenting with USC and working with my colleagues. I think I have a pretty good feel for where the literature is. Like, I have a series of papers coming out at conference, AI conferences next month. Well, now we're in July, but July and in August. And as a consequence, you get a sense of what's doable and what's not doable and how these things can go wrong, and maybe really terribly wrong.
This is one of those years, Bart, people just want to go away.
It's been a tough one, and it may get tougher still. And then to have a very contentious election on top of it, it's a year to remember.
Absolutely. With everything you've been writing about over the years, what got you into this area? You must have seen something, whether you looked into a crystal ball or what. But, I mean, you have been able to put your thumb on a lot of futuristic things that have come true. How'd you see these things?
A lot of what I did, George, was teaching. So the best way to understand a subject is teach it. And we often tell students, just try to explain what you learned today or you think you learned today to your roommate or someone else. So there's that aspect. The more you teach, for example, what's known as Maxwell's equations, the four equations that completely describe electricity and magnetism, and that lead to modern quantum theory and general relativity in some sense, and many, many other things. You just get a deeper feel for that, and once it's embedded in your synapses, you start to create with it. You see a problem, you think of different solutions. And as a professor, I think we get to focus on those kind of abstractions in a paid way, and much more than the average person does, and more so than the average person does in a laboratory. And that's where it's largely come from. But, you know, George, I actually started out writing music. I was a scholarship student to USC on a music scholarship writing film music. And to me, that was one of the hardest things I ever did, to come up with something new. As tough as...
Oh, my God, yeah.
As that was, and as tough as mathematics, and mathematics is just a language. But to come up with a new theme, new chord progression, it's very tough. And it's just a discipline... creativity. The other thing you learn from doing that, George, you know whether you got a big result or a little result. I used to write a lot of classical music, and so I'd get a result, say, well, maybe this is good enough for a violin and piano sonata. This something bigger. This really warrants a string quartet, which I did a lot of as a kid. Or this one is so good that it's big enough, you could build a symphony on it.
Right.
And I did as a kid. And so you get the same sense with science. I'm very hesitant to publish. And I usually don't do it unless I consider at least one major mathematical theorem, and I go over it, and it just grows in time. I take a long time to bring results. Or the book Cool Earth, you know, it really took years of development. I write it, set it aside, and come back. And part of that, for example, I just published a paper since I last talked to you, it came out in November, on quantum annealing. Now, this is a powerful way to search bumpy surfaces of cost, trying to find a low-cost solution. For certain surfaces, it's the fastest known way. And some people have called this super AI or AI supremacy, if we can achieve that. But one of the applications of this would be searching genomes. At minimum, trying to come up with versions, say, of your genes that have a much lower chance of getting cancer. But once you open that door, George, once you turn loose the powers of still Moore's law to some degree, the ever-greater exponential powers of computers to search your genomes, you're going to do a lot more than worry about your health. You're going to worry about how you look and the like. And the novel Cool Earth explores that. So, for example, if you want to make a child, well, we have a way of doing that now. Let's say you and your wife or your spouse, and that child is a kind of statistical average. Of course, there's many other averages that are known as brothers and sisters. Once you found that average as a kind of dot in what we call genome space, we can then do random searches around that dot, and we can constrain those searches.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.